In this episode of Movie Rollers, we're going to review The Host, Starbuck, and The Place Beyond the Pines. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. So it's another triple bill for us today.
Yeah, we're knocking them out.
Yeah, a lot of movies to talk about.
And more coming.
And yeah. I must say, every time we kind of are holding ourselves back because we have so much to say, but we want to keep this short. So there's so much to talk.
I know. Well, I know that. I think last episode we probably spent a good 15 minutes on Spring Breakers, mostly about boobs, but
neon boobs, no less.
I really want Yazdi to see it and then us to record that one again.
Yeah, we should. We should. There might be a Spring Breakers bonus podcast bonus at some point.
Boobness.
So we started this one off on the right note. We have three movies to talk about today. We're going to talk about The Host, Place Beyond the Pines, and also Starbuck. So I'm pretty agnostic as to which order we go in. Should we talk about The Host?
Sure.
It's a fairly big release. Mm-hmm. And the intro for that is with you, Rashmi.
So what if everything you love was taken from you in the blink of an eye? The Host is the next epic love story from the creator of the Twilight Saga, worldwide best-selling author Stephanie Meyer. When an unseen enemy threatens mankind by taking over their bodies and erasing their memories, Melanie Strider will risk everything to protect the people she cares most about. Jared, Ian, her brother Jamie, and her uncle Jeb, proving that love can conquer all in a dangerous new world. So this was written for the screen and directed by Andrew Nico. And Joe and I are the only ones that saw this. Yazdi, I forgot that you never saw this one. Maybe you escaped.
Although
maybe you didn't.
Although I'm a big fan of Andrew Niccol. He made Gattaca with
Halle Berry. No, I thought it was
Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke a long time ago. And then he also did Just in Time or In Time. Remember with Justin Timberlake?
Oh, I loved In Time. I was the only one that liked that one.
I liked it too. But he does great futuristic.
I didn't know that he did In Time.
Yeah, same director. But so I want to see it just for that.
Well.
Okay.
Joe, why don't you tell the Yazdi whether you think it's worth him rushing out to see this one?
Don't.
So, what was I saying last episode about the Tomatometer being wrong? This movie currently is scoring 11% on the Tomatometer.
No.
11%.
Really?
And the tagline here is, poorly scripted and dramatically ineffective, The Host is mostly stale and tedious with moments of unintentional hilarity. And that pretty much sums it up for me. I mean, this movie...
This movie
will find an audience, but that audience ain't me. And I think early on when we started Movie Rollers, I think we were seeing a lot of movies that weren't really ones that we were going to be interested in. And I think they weren't really ever going to get a fair crack at the whip. This is one of those movies. It's targeted at a very, I think, kind of a teenage girl audience. So this is never going to be a top-notch movie for me. That said, a lot of those movies that are targeted at those age groups, if they're well done, well executed, are just enjoyable for everyone. But this ain't one of them. It's so precisely targeted at the hormonal teenage 13-year-old girl whose feelings are raging. Yeah. And, you know, they read romance novels and Twilight is everything to them. So, you know, this movie was never going to work for a wider audience, and me, myself included.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes, yeah, I'm agreeing with Joe. This podcast isn't long enough to discuss all the things that are wrong with this movie. And shame on me for not having read the book or knowing much about it, but I'm sure that wouldn't have helped me much, to be honest. I'm not sure that anyone over the age of 17 is going to get much out of this movie. I agree with you, Joe. And since I am way over 17, I didn't either. This is Teenage Alien Mills and Boons. I hated this movie.
Teenage Aliens Mills and Boons. Let that be our tagline for this podcast.
Yeah, the worst thing about the movie was the audience was also having a bit of a time with it. I mean, there were two huge unintentional laughs from what has become, I guess, a fairly cynical audience these days. You know, both involved a kissing moment. And so it should have been a very touching point in the movie. But instead, everybody literally everybody belly laughed. It wasn't even like a chuckle, or it was a full on,
like it was an embarrassed, we're embarrassed really, for you laugh. It was
horrible. And I felt so bad for the movie at that point, because I was like, I know that's not where you wanted me to feel at that moment, but boy, that was ridiculous. Like, you know, I can't imagine that escaped your attention as filmmakers when you were in the cutting room trying to figure out how to create a feeling with what you'd shot, because it was so bad in those two moments. And I've just felt for it. So
I think for me, and I don't know whether this is in the book, so I'd love to find out, but the inherent problem, the biggest hole in this movie, is that there's a group of people who are trying to escape the aliens, but the aliens apparently are there to create peace. I didn't understand what was going on between the aliens and the humans, because clearly these weren't nasty aliens. They were only nasty if you weren't alien and they hadn't taken over your body.
Right. They were body snatchers. They would erase your personality.
Right.
So
exactly. Right. But if someone erased your personality and you got Utopia for it, then why was the human race so against that? Anyway, that's a whole different
I don't want existential, my personality
erased. Existential discussion that we could have for a podcast that lasts weeks. But that for me was the biggest problem, because...
No, you totally didn't get that.
I totally didn't get that. And shame on this movie for not convincing me.
I mean, the world was a better place because humans didn't live in it. That was the basic premise. Right. It's like, there's this... Because it's like the Matrix. If everyone became a robot, there would be no fighting, there would be no war.
Right.
Everyone would get on. We wouldn't need money. We wouldn't need to fight over resources. But there would be no car accidents because nobody is being human.
Okay,
and impulsive.
But let me stop you there. The smart thing about the Matrix was that the aliens created that so that they could live off the humans. In this movie, I couldn't understand the point, because they inhabit the world and then they apparently take off. Anyway, that was one of the biggest problems.
You didn't get this movie.
I so didn't get, exactly. And like I said, shame on the movie for not doing a better job to educate me.
It's never
but
your fault.
But the other problem I had was the vision of the future. This is like way into the future, but we've still got platform beds and the aliens only differentiate themselves, the true aliens, because they wear white and they have silver cars and metallic helicopters. And I was like, really? This is your image of the future? I know the eyes, but that was the only way you knew they were an alien. But I'm saying,
because
other
they
than that,
inhabited human bodies.
I know, but they're the aliens.
So when they didn't,
like, really, is that what technology is going to be like? How dull!
But do you ever see them not inhabiting a human body?
Yes, and then they look like electronic sperm.
Oh, fun!
It was so weird.
Rashmi, you totally missed the point. They're body snatchers, right? They can't exist outside a host. They're parasites.
Right.
So they enter... Anyway, why am I even debating the merits of this movie? But yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. I actually thought it was quite a well-realized post-apocalyptic world. You know, I think it is very much like taking the premise of The Matrix and turning it on its head. Instead of humans being in this artificial world, the artificial world almost... It overrides the human, everything that's human about somebody. And
so, hence the host.
Yeah. Personally, I thought that was kind of a neat idea. I like that premise. I think the biggest problem that the movie had was that it tried to wrap this teenage love story around this whole idea. You end up with this kind of, you know, love conquers all type narrative that they're trying to bring to the table. But it doesn't work with all of the issues that are going on in their world. And it ends up being childish and childlike, and it just feels like a kind of thing that a 12-year-old would have written.
So, can you follow the actors? Is it Saoirse Ronan? I think
Ronan. I love Saoirse Ronan. I found her so damn irritating in this movie. No. I wanted to slap her all the time.
Performances, I thought, were okay in this. Okay. I mean, I think,
but she's not as good as she is in Hannah.
But the material's at fault,
right?
She, so that was Yazdi's question.
She has a ridiculous situation where her body is being used,
right.
a host creature is implanted,
mm-hmm.
and typically what happens is that the human personality, when that
starts to get erased,
fades away.
Right.
Her personality fights on.
Okay.
So she ends up doing this voiceover thing. So she ends up, and that's why I thought she did a good job, because Her body is inhabited by this alien, which has a distinct voice and personality. It's her voice, her body, her physicality. But then you have this voice in her head that is also her combating own. With that. And so personally, I thought as an actress, she did a great job because I never felt for one second that that was forced. I really felt the personality of the voice coming through, even though the physicality and the behaviors were being was something else. So I actually thought as an actress, she did a good job with this. Some of the lines that she had were ridiculous, and some of the things that she had to do. Again, I don't care if I spoil this movie because there's a kissing scene.
Many kissing scenes.
There's a one in particular. There's a kissing scene where the alien is kissing somebody, but then the Saoirse Ronan voice is saying, "No, don't kiss him. I hate him." Right. And so, you know, that's kind of a ridiculous situation. But again, as
like the man with two brains.
It's exactly that. It's
but
exactly
not funny that. And so not clever. It's not kind smart.
Of ridiculous what the actress has to do here, you know. And I think that's where the movie, you know, had a hard time. Diane Kruger, I thought, was great.
Yeah, she was good. She was an appropriate
bad guy. I really enjoyed her performance. And everyone else just read their lines, you know. This is not a highbrow movie.
I think it's trying to be deep and ask, like, what's human? What's love? But it didn't follow through at all for me. Okay, have we banned this movie enough? Yeah,
have we beaten this horse?
Yeah.
Are there going to be sequels?
Oh, I hope not.
It's set up that way. I mean, it's definitely set up that way. Again, I think this is written by somebody who's very savvy, who understands the nature of her audience. And I think on the page, this might have worked a lot better, especially if it was being read by, you know, a prepubescent or peripubescent, you know, 13-year-old girl. It's the kind of thing that would swoon. I mean, the romantic leads, I think, are appropriately good looking. They're kind of, you know, very swoonable if you're that, you know, 12, farmer boys. Right, but they are. They're nice.
Horse hands.
They're nice, charming, stable boys that you could bring home to mom and that you would, like, totally love to death. So, again, for its target audience, it's a different experience.
Okay, let's turn this one up. Okay. So this movie should have a 17 rating, i.e. only suitable for those 17 and below. This is way too soapy, broody and meandering for my liking, and way too much bad snogging. Ugh.
Score?
1 out of 10.
No. Come on.
Really? One?
No. One is an offensive movie.
Such a waste of time, and it was a long film too.
Ouch.
It's hours of my life that I won't get back.
So here's what I'll say.
Give it a 2.
If your body has been inhabited by an idealistic, never-been-kissed teenager, then I think you might quite like this film.
I think Yasti's going to like it.
I'm going to go watch it, and I'm going to like it, and I'm going to come back and yell at the two of you.
If I'm honest, I think as a kind of a young teenage boy, I would have quite liked this movie too. It would have been a great rental. I would have never admitted to anyone in the world that I would have liked this movie, but I think I could have seen myself enjoying it. That said, I probably would never have seen this as a teenage boy because I would have gone to G.I. Joe, which opens at the same time. And I think...
Or Olympus Has Fallen.
Or Olympus Has Fallen, right. So, you know, for me, I'm going to rate this two ways. I think if you are its target audience, 7 out of 10. If you're me, it's going to get... less out of 10, and that's all I'm going to say. It's not fair for me to review this movie. It just isn't. I'll rate it the way Rashmi did, which is totally unfair. It's not for me.
Okay.
Well, fair what enough. If you're a parent having to go with your kid? You should know.
You should know that so this take, is for them.
Take I mean, your Kindle and read if, outside. If Don't waste your money on the ticket.
If you're a parent,
we're doing a service.
To, you know,
public service announcement.
No, if you're taking your kid to Chuck E. Cheese, are you going to complain about the quality of the food? No, it's Chuck E. Cheese. It's not for you. It's for them. It's, you know, and that's what this movie is. So it's like Chuck E. Cheese.
good defense, Joe. I'm surprised.
I like it. You've been very, very...
very convincing.
Defense attorney for this one.
It's not fair because I was sitting there watching it thinking, it has so many things that I hate, but it's not fair. They never set out to try and impress me. This isn't who
I think Yasti's going to like for. It. I think his big heart will give way to...
But 11% on Rotten Tomatoes. Ouch, that's painful.
Well, let's quickly leave this one behind.
All right. Starbuck. Or Place Beyond the Pines.
Place Beyond the Pines.
Let's switch gears a little bit.
Okay. So The Place Beyond the Pines, the highly anticipated new drama from director Derek Cianfrance, who we loved in Blue Valentine, powerfully explores the consequences of motorcycle rider Luke. Luke's fateful decision to commit a crime to support his child. The incident renders him targeted by a policeman called Avery, and the two men become locked on a tense collision course, which will have a devastating impact on both of their families in the years following. Joe, why don't you start us off on this one?
Not everyone will agree with me on this, but I found this movie to be an incredibly powerful piece of work. It's like a trilogy in one. For me, it repeated many of the things that were successful in Blue Valentine and cements Cianfrance as one of my favorite directors working today. I love this movie.
Yes, Dee.
So this film does something that I've seen so few movies do, which is this. It so clearly demonstrates a pivot point in its storytelling where you can actually see the narrative change from one universe to another. And there are 100 things to love about this movie and 100 things to complain about this film, but it is this, the unique structure of this film, that for me trumps all of the considerations and makes me say that this film is brilliant, and I do not toss that word around lightly. I thought this movie, I probably like it as much as you do, Joe. I mean, I thought it was brilliant. And there's 100 things which are wrong with it.
I'm seeing a ruffle.
So my brow is furrowed because I think I saw a different movie. Blue Valentine and Ryan Gosling in that movie were one of my favorite movies of that year. I loved Bradley Cooper in Silver Linings Playbook last year. I hated this movie. This is one of the most disappointing movies of the entire year. I don't think I watched the same movie as you guys.
I think this is a very polarizing movie. Yeah. I think people are going to fall on one side or the other.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just say where it went wrong for me, because you guys got to say a lot of what you liked. This was not only implausible, but also predictable and Bollywood in its melodrama. Way too soapy and pointless for my liking. I could go along with it, except there was a huge casting problem with the guy who plays Bradley Cooper's son. And I just couldn't buy the crazy behavior. It was like nails on a chalkboard for me.
I agree that the movie had some plot and narrative issues. And I think in many ways it bit off a little bit more than it could chew, because this is three movies in one. I mean, so there have to be some compromises. And I think one of the things that you probably found irritating, and ordinarily I would have found enormously irritating, were some of the coincidences and contrivances. Because I think in much less capable hands, it would have been almost tacky. I mean, I just think the way that things came together, just it's like a Victor Hugo novel where, you know, it's one of these old epic stories with generational changes and people meeting each other. And, you know, you saw that in Les Miserables with, you know, the son and the daughter meeting, you know, and it was just, but so it doesn't work in a modern day context, except it was so well handled that I went along with it and I bought the world and it didn't upset me.
What I liked about the movie, and I'm so glad, I mean, I'm so glad I saw this movie without knowing anything about it.
Yes.
And, agreed. You know, I even hesitate to talk about the fact that it is three movies in one, or that, you know, that it, but it is. I mean, everybody has mentioned it in their reviews. But for me, I really didn't know where the movie was going on a minute-by-minute basis. And even though I wasn't liking, I'm like, okay, wait a minute now. Is this the same movie I was watching half an hour ago? What's going on here? What happened? Who are these new characters? What's going on? I kind of grew to admire it because it's done with some degree of care. And again, I can list everything which works wonderfully for this movie, and I can list all the stuff which does not work for the movie. I mean, the one thing which I really liked about the movie is that, and I really want to commend the director for doing this, is that this film evokes, through most of its running time, minute by minute, the sense of dread. Okay, I mean, it almost seems like it's inflammable. Like any of the characters just might do something unspeakably terrible at any time. All of these characters are so unstable. I don't know if unstable is the right word. I had this knot in my stomach feeling, oh yeah. God, please don't do something terrible. Please don't do something miserable. So, you know, so it created this sense of anxiety and without resorting to actual violence for the most part, but it was this threat of violence which kind of kept me on the edge of the seat. And there were a number of times when I actually flinched and turned. Yeah. There were a couple of things where I turned my face away from the screen because the violence was so intense. It was very realistic. And I kind of like the sense of uncomfortableness that it creates in the viewer.
I mean, I agree with you on that, Yazdi, but I think you get that sense of dread because of that first pivot point. Uh-huh. Once that first pivot point happens, you're like, ah, oh, now what? Right? So it's unexpected. If you go in with knowing nothing and go in, right. And I would recommend that people go in knowing nothing. Then all the cards are off the table in a sense, you know, once that first thing happens. But I think for me, what didn't work, and I'm probably on the side where too much happened that didn't work, is I didn't know whose story I was watching, and so I didn't invest in anyone. So I didn't see that traditional
watching anyone's story.
Right. I mean, so what were we watching? We're watching random.
That as you're watching.
Right, but then you're just watching a random set of scenes where you don't know who to follow.
I can see why you feel that way.
Because you don't see anyone's transformation. You don't see anyone's character arc. You don't see anyone's struggle.
No, I can see why you feel that way, but I disagree about not seeing character arcs because I think many characters in this movie had very well-defined arcs and goals. You know, they definitely started at one point and then they transitioned to something else by the end of their story. And so if there was anyone's arc to follow, I guess it would be the Bradley Cooper son character.
You know, and then he was way too irritating to watch.
Well, that's a whole other issue there. But in terms of the writing and the story, If you want to follow something, I think he has the most traditional story arc.
Yeah.
Everyone else does something unexpected. And I think the unexpectedness is where I found the genius, because even though it was contrived and clumsily coincidental at times, it's the way that the story was told, it was the way it unfolded in front of me that I was so involved in it.
I mean, there's a scene in the movie, and I'm trying to be very careful not to say much about this movie, but there's a scene in the movie where Bradley Cooper's character gets taken from his house by Ray Liotta and some of the other policemen.
Yeah.
And that's
one of the best scenes in the movie.
And that movie, I couldn't bear the... I couldn't even breathe because just the tension of what horrible thing they might do. You know, and I think it takes a very seasoned director and a script writer to generate a situation like that.
Right. Absolutely. So there was that portion of the movie
that's in the second part. Right. It's past the pivot point.
Right. But what I'm saying is that's one of the best parts of the movie. And in a sense, we invested in that portion of the movie and then we move on to another portion of the movie.
But
and I was like, oh, well, what happened to them? I want to go back to them. I enjoyed them. They were great characters.
But I think each part of the movie independently generates the tension. And I'll fully grant you that the movie kind of leaves all these characters hanging. But I think that's a hazard of the whole structure of the movie. The way the movie is structured, and I find that's where the genius of the movie is, because I haven't quite seen a movie where you actually see this turning of the whole, you know, whole script, the whole movie, the whole universe kind of turns twice over, I think.
There was one, it was called Cloud Atlas, and it sucked.
Oh, I love that movie. But,
I know.
but anyway, I do want to comment about one thing which I really disliked about the movie is that it treats its female characters very poorly. I mean, they are all oppressed, blunted individuals at the mercy of the questionably insane behavior of all the alpha male characters. I mean, all the women in this movie are cowering. They're like, you know, please don't hit me, please don't. You know, and they just didn't come off looking well. I mean, all these male guys were, you know, crazy psychos, and all the poor women were like, you know, God. So I wish that part was a little bit more balanced.
Yeah.
You know? And then I'll completely grant you that the last part of the movie really strains credibility.
Yeah.
But, you know, by that point, I was so enthralled by the structure of the movie that all was forgiven.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the strongest storyline is the first one.
Mm-hmm.
It goes a little downhill after that, but not by much. What about performances? Because it has a wonderful cast: Ryan Gosling, Bradley Cooper, Ava Mendes, Rose Byrne, Ray Liotta, Ben Mendelsohn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, there was not a bad performance in this movie. I think, Rashmi, I think the son, I forget what the actor's name was.
Cole DeHaan. Sorry, Dane DeHaan.
Dane DeHaan.
He was in Chronicle. He's really good.
Oh, I couldn't stomach him.
Okay,
I
are you talking just... about Bradley Cooper's son or Ryan Gosling's son?
Bradley Cooper's.
Oh, okay, then I don't know who that is. That's somebody else.
AJ, Emery Cohen. Yeah. So, not one that I'm familiar with, but...
And hopefully one we'll never see again. He wasn't this bad.
But do you have this reaction to him precisely because his character was so disagreeable? If so,
I just think it was a bad casting. It just didn't fit with the rest of the movie. Okay. I don't understand how you would have that. Yeah, how would you have a son like that if you were in that world? It didn't make sense. I mean, you know, you buy the world, but then this was a red herring. It was so weird.
And I can see how that can happen. I mean, you know, the plot line there is he has an obsessed father, the parents, it's a broken marriage, and there's obviously not a lot of time for their kid. So, you know, their kid is educated, you know, on the streets. And so, and he has access to what, you know, large amounts of resources. And so to me, it held together. I mean, I know why you felt, and I know why it didn't work for you, but at the same time, I think it was just real enough. Again, when you put it in the context of the direction and the world and the story that they're trying to tell, not a problem for me in particular. Everyone else was brilliant. You know, Cooper was terrific. Ava Mendez was spectacular in this. I was not expecting that of her.
I would go so far as to say I think everybody in that movie almost does career best performances.
Yeah.
You know, I'm including Ryan Gosling, who's done amazing work in movie after movie. I think he was so good.
I give you, Ryan Gosling was good.
And Bradley Cooper, I don't know why people don't like... I think Bradley Cooper was great in this.
He was okay. This is no Silver Linings Playbook.
He had a lot to do. Of course, he's not a crazy man, so he doesn't have all of those...
Those highs and lows, yeah.
Right.
But he has quite a few.
But he has some real meat to what he has to deliver here.
Yeah,
real tough emotional situations to deal with, and...
See, and I didn't buy the way he dealt with them either. I just, again, I think it's a question of implausibility that you can buy into. And for me, it just wasn't, I just couldn't make that connection with the movie. It was just way too crazy.
Here's one line from the movie. It's in the trailer, and the line goes, "If you ride like lightning, you're going to crash like thunder." What a terrible line that is. Like, really, I mean... Think about that in any context, and it's ridiculous. It comes across like bad writing. But you know what? In this movie, I didn't blink when I heard it because Gosling's character understood it. It's his world. People like him in his world speak like that. He's a simple man, and the line is simple like him, and they talk in cliches. And so for me, it really worked, but it's all about context.
That Ben Mendelsohn, I don't know, he's been in a few other movies.
Yeah, he was so good. He was good.
That's a difficult character, and he just completely nailed it. Very believable.
Okay, should we wind this one up? Go, Joe.
This movie just has a terrific narrative that I think in less capable hands would have been an absolute disaster. But at the end of the day, I enjoyed this movie so much. I took its journey... the time went by, even though it's a very long movie, it's like 2.5 hours in length, the time went by so quickly for me. And like you, SD, the constant edge of my seat, unpredictability of it all, despite the script problems, just it was fantastic. I felt much the same way as I felt in Blue Valentine, which is transported to somebody else's world for a couple of hours. So I'm going to give this, I'm going to have to give it a 9 out of 10. Like Blue Valentine, I don't think I could watch this again. As much as I respect Blue Valentine, I have no desire to go through that a second time. I feel the same way about this movie, but the initial viewing, terrific stuff, 9 out of 10. I love this director, what he does.
Yes, Steve.
I mean, granted that this movie tries to evoke larger than life, you know, this mythic Cain and Abel type of transcendence, you know, about fathers and sons, that it doesn't quite earn. But even then, there's a scene towards the end of the movie which just emotionally just crumbled me. And I'm sure it had no effect on anybody else. And I don't want to talk about it because it's a spoiler, but it really got to me. And I think what this movie is it's altogether unique. It's unique in its structure. It's unique in what it goes about saying, and it almost, even though it bites off more than it can chew, I think more than anything else, it solidifies, like you said, Joe, that after Blue Valentine, that this Derek Cian France is a legitimate filmmaker with tremendous vision. I mean, and I actually think this movie is better than Blue Valentine, which I thought was great. So I think it's almost an evolution in terms mm-hmm. of him going from just those two characters now to a more epic scale. See, I like messy, ambitious films, and this movie is messy and it's ambitious. And, you know, it will be probably on my list of, you know, best movies in the first half of the year. I give it an 8.5 out of 10. And I'm
9.
And
nine.
Do it.
9.
Okay, I'll give it a 9 out of 10. Just because it's so different. And I do want to say it's not everybody's cup of tea. Okay, it was the perfect brew for me, but it's probably not everybody's cup of tea.
It's true, yeah.
Yeah.
And I am one of those people. So at 2 hours and 20 minutes, this isn't worth the time investment. This was not enjoyable, and I didn't feel satisfied by the end of it. This is not worth the journey to this destination, in my opinion. I think I'm living in the next world that you guys are going to come to, if it's anything like this movie.
Score?
Oh, 3 out of 10.
No, are you kidding me?
It was worse than average.
No, it's so accomplished.
And it was double better than The Host.
No, come on. It's
which
so
I gave one.
It's so much more accomplished.
So wrong. The
honestly.
Gosling performance alone was 5 out of 10.
No, the Gosling performance is good. I didn't disagree with you.
Are you kidding me?
Seriously. I don't think I watched the same movie as you guys.
Just in terms of its technique, okay, the first scene of the movie goes for a good 5 minutes. The whole credits movie, it's a single take. The best I can tell, it's a single take.
It was so dull and useless. What was the point of it?
It's introducing the main character of the movie.
I get it, but like you could have done it so much more efficiently.
You gave 21 and up 3 out of 10.
I know.
Really? This movie is on par with that? Are you
really?
Kidding?
I didn't enjoy it.
You're absolutely bloody wrong. Yazdi?
You're wrong.
Bloody wrong.
You're wrong just in terms of the technique. I mean, the first time that the Ryan Gosling and the Bradley Cooper character meet, single shot.
2 points.
Single shot. Come on.
Got 2 points.
There's a lot.
And then the scene with Ray Liotta got my 3rd point. Everything else was...
Eva Mendes. She was so broken and perfect.
Her aging process compared to her husband was so different. Her husband did not age one day, and she aged about 50 years in a span of what was supposed to be 17 years. It was ridiculous.
He's black. We don't get old.
She's been through harder life than he has.
So he's paying for more. Her.
All right, Rashmi hated it, but she's wrong. If you listen to this podcast, Rashmi's wrong.
Look, if you want something different and something amazing and something great,
if you can't sleep at night, no, you know what? Watch this movie.
I do understand why you didn't like it. There's a lot not to like here if you choose to feel that way. But for me, it was a choice. And I think I looked at some of those moments and I was like, you know, that wouldn't ordinarily work, but I felt it.
But you have to see the problem with this movie is you have to buy the implausibility. And if you buy into it, then you're going to drink the Kool-Aid and give it a 9 out of 10. If you are sensible and smart and you see through the craziness that is this movie, then you're going to give it 3.
I'd be totally wrong about that.
I'll grant you, I had big problems with the last act of the movie. I had a big problem with it. But by that point, I was so in love with the movie.
But yes, that was half the movie.
No. All right, we've done this one. Okay. We're not gonna come to a resolution.
We will agree to disagree on this. This is why you get 3 opinions.
So let's finish up with the movie Starbuck. Yazdi, can you give us a couple of lines on Starbuck and what it is?
Couple of lines it is. So Starbuck tells the story of a 40-something slacker whose lover informs him that she's pregnant. But that's the least of his problems, since he finds himself at the bad end of a class action lawsuit at the same time. To his utter surprise, he's the biologic father of 142 children who were born courtesy of his sperm bank donations. That, in a nutshell, is Starbuck, which is directed by Ken Scott. It's also written by Scott along with Martin Petit, and it stars Patrick Ward, Julie Le Breton, and Antoine Bertrand. I haven't seen this movie. I really wanted to see it. I was telling Rashmi I really want to see it, but I didn't get a chance. I missed the screening. I'm eager to hear what you guys thought about it.
I mean, this movie was a long time in coming, right? Because I think it won Audience Award at last year's Toronto. I believe it's picked up something at Toronto. Okay. And so it was introduced by San Diego Film Society, Cinema Society. So they gave us that little nugget. And there are three words that I will use to describe this movie. Sweet, sweet, and sweet.
Aww.
It's a very sweet little film. I mean, I found it a little too much for my taste. You know, it's like that candy that's just, you know, you want to enjoy it more, but there's too much sugar in there, and you know just how bad it is for you. This isn't bad for you per se, but it was just so overly sweet that I found myself getting a little annoyed with it towards the end, where I wanted a bit more reality interjected into what is a ridiculous and comedic situation.
So, Joe, you stole the words out of my mouth. Yes, yeah, I'm going to say rush out and see this one.
Aww.
This is a really sweet movie, although highly ridiculous, that manages to capture your heart and take you along willingly on its journey. Considering this is a subtitled movie from French, the dialogue...
Well, it's spoken in Canadian French.
Yeah, Canadian French. The dialogue is excellent. Just a delightful movie. I mean... Just delightful. I can't say enough about how much I love this movie.
Oh, the world needs such movies. Sweet, delightful movies.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the basic premise is, you know, this guy is kind of, you know, lost in his life, and suddenly he has this revelation about these children that that belong to him. And so, you know, the movie is him kind of coming to terms with what that means, and he goes through kind of, you know, he's a very likable guy, but he's one of these loser characters. Mm-hmm. And suddenly his life ends up having all this meaning to it that it didn't have before. And so movies like that just warm the cockles, right? I mean... If done right, because it becomes about humanity. It becomes about who somebody is. It comes down to, you know, what is important in the world versus what is not important in the world. And... yes, it's all a little too sugar-coated in this particular storytelling, but who can hate a movie for that? I mean, why would you dislike a movie for being very sweetly human?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, for me, it was a little bit slow-paced, and it takes time to unravel. And at times, Joe, I think, I don't know for you, but at times it felt like it dragged on a little bit. But I think it just gave us a great excuse to watch this great actor, Patrick, who would charm us even more. And I think a large reason as to why this movie is so wonderful to watch is because of him and his portrayal of this person. It's so good.
Wow.
I mean, that's high praise indeed. I didn't feel the same way about the performances here. I didn't feel the same way about the direction. It didn't feel like a work of greatness. But, you know, this movie has been bought by one of the big Hollywood studios. It's being remade.
Oh.
The lead is going to be Vince Vaughn. Think about Vince Vaughn as you know, again, this was part of the intro from the San Diego Cinema Society. But he planted that seed in my brain. And as I went through the movie, I was like, yep, that's exactly the kind of Vince Vaughn. You know, it's the Vince Vaughn from, you know, Four Christmases that... you know, sweet, romantic-y guy, but...
a little bit stupid, makes bad decisions.
Makes horrible decisions, but ultimately they're all well-meaning. And that's what this movie is.
I haven't got much more to say.
No, me either.
Okay, so I was going to say, you know, you won't need too many cups of coffee to keep you awake through this sweet and endearing, rather implausible movie. I'm going to give this one an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, this movie is about a loser, but it's anything but a loser of a movie. I think it is just delightful piece of movie watching. You know, don't run out and see this. I mean, just enjoy this when you get the opportunity to watch it. You know,
rush out.
For me, it's not a rush out and see. One of my favorite moments in the movie is probably the biggest hug that has ever been depicted on the movie screen.
Oh.
It's enormous in its scope and ambition. It's like, how on earth they did that, I have no idea, but it was such a tender moment. So for that, it gets an 8 out of 10 from me.
I think these little movies need support, because everybody goes to watch G.I. Joe Retaliation, which doesn't even bother to screen for critics. And everybody goes to watch, you know, The Host, but You know, these little movies need...
They're little gems. Yeah, they're just going to leave you champions. With such a warm feeling.
Yeah,
it's going to make you love humankind.
I mean, I'm very nervous about the Hollywood spin on this.
Because I'm nervous about it too, Joe. It has
that
very homemade
feel to it that I think a movie like this needs in order to retain its charm. When you start throwing dollars and then you get, you know, lots of screenwriters involved and everyone's trying to have, you know, more gags because it's gonna have to meet some kind of focus group approval. I think you might dilute what is essentially a single vision in this movie, which is this very sweet character journey.
I agree. But I'm frightened that Vince Vaughn is gonna play the lead. Watch this before it gets Hollywood.
I'm gonna see it this weekend.
And it has nothing to do with coffee. No, I mean...
People might think...
I'm sure it's a pretty common question, but it's nothing to do with the coffee chain.
Alrighty.
Okay.
So let's wrap up this episode for today. Let us know what you thought of our reviews, what you thought of these movies and what you think of some of the directors and performances we've spoken about. Mail at moviewallahs.com, twitter.com/moviewallahs, and facebook.com/moviewallahs. Well, until our next episode, it's going to be a good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.